one left, and I limped and dragged myself toward the gas tanks. Figured I needed a long spell of rest because I was so sore and beat up from the fight. I'd gone maybe 25 steps when it occurred to me that I couldn't see the gas tanks. Didn't know exactly which way to go, and was too wore out to get there anyway. I mean, that Doberman had given me a terrible beating. My throat hurt, my neck hurt, my ears had been chewed up. I was limping on one front leg and packing one of the back ones. When you were built to be a four-legged creature, it's hard to motivate on two. I found the corral fence and followed it around to the gate in front of the saddle shed. That was as far as I could go. I flopped down and waited for help to arrive. I knew Drover would be along directly, and he could lead me down to the gas tanks and help me into bed. I waited and waited. Drover didn't show up. Couldn't understand that. You'd think the little guy would come around just as soon as he was sure the coast was clear. I mean, when the head of ranch security is out of commission, that's cause for concern, right? About half an hour later, I heard something off to the south. With considerable effort, I lifted my head and looked in that direction. Couldn't see anything but a blur, but my ears are pretty keen and I got a good reading on the sound. It was kind of a click, 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 made by a four-legged animal with a short stride. The click part came from little claws hitting the hard ground. It was Drover. I knew it was. Drover, I'm over here. I cocked my head and listened. Whoever it was didn't answer. He broke into a run and took off to the east, and in a minute the sound was gone. That was strange. Why would Drover take off like that? Surely he knew I'd been beat up and needed some help. Well, I thought about it and came up with an answer. Drover was out looking for me, and with his poor vision and dead nose, he just hadn't located me yet. He'd find me after a bit. But why had he run when he heard me call? That was a little harder to fit into the picture. But, you know, when a guy wants the picture to come out right, he'll find ways of making it. Facts don't squeal when you stuff them where you want them to go. I told myself that Drover was still shook up over the big fight and hadn't got his nerves under control yet. My voice had scared him. He'd come around after a while. Well, the hours dragged on and still no Drover. The afternoon sun got blistering hot and the wind blew sand in my eyes. Along towards the end of the day, I was feeling mighty weak and thirsty and decided I'd better give up waiting for Drover. I mean, it might take him another half day to find me. So I pushed myself up on all two legs. I was packing the other two, remember, and limped over to the front of the saddle shed door, where the cowboys were sure to find me when they shut down for the night. It couldn't have been more than 10 or 12 steps, but it took all my energy just to get there. I flopped down, curled up in a ball, and waited. Sure enough, at sundown, Slim and Loper came along and put their saddle horses up for the night. I was in perfect position. They couldn't put their saddles up without seeing me there, and I felt sure that once they saw my wretched condition, they'd give me some well-deserved sympathy and maybe carry me down to the gas tanks. Slim pulled off his saddle and came up to the door. His eyes were red with dirt and wind, and he looked tired. Move, Hank. I gotta get in. I lifted my head and whacked my tail and whined. Figured that would give him the hint that I was stove up. He opened the door, stepped over me, and went inside, dragging his saddle. I took a lick from all four cinches and both stirrups, and I mean that last one hurt. Then Loper came. He looked down at me and muttered something under his breath. Then he tried to walk over me and stepped on my tail, and so naturally I yelped. What's so bad about that? I mean, my tail's alive, and when you step on it, it hurts. And when it hurts, I yelp. Seems reasonable to me. But Loper stumbled, and I guess he got sore about it. Hank, for crying out loud, you have to park yourself right in the middle of traffic? Slim came over to the door and looked down at me. He acts like he don't feel real good. Well, at last we were getting somewhere. I whapped my tail just to let them know that they were on the right track. Then Loper said, if he can't whip these dogs anymore, he's going to have to learn to stay out of fights. They stepped over me and closed up the shed. If you can't handle Billy's dog, then next time he comes around, you better go to the house. You hear? When your body fails, you have to use your brain, if you got one. That's the kind of sympathy you get around this ranch. All they expect is a 24-hour day, a perfect record, and a pint of blood every now and then just to prove, oh well, a guy can't afford to get worked up about injustice. It's worse than running rabbits. Darkness fell, and there I was, all alone, curled up in a ball of hair with the wind blowing dirt in my face. The moon came up, and the coyotes started howling. If they'd known my condition, they would have ravaged the place. I mean, swept down and pillaged it from one end to the other. I could only hope that they wouldn't launch an attack, because ranch security was at its most dangerous level in many years. At last, I drifted off to sleep. Don't recall what time it was that I woke up. I heard some noise out there between the saddle shed and the house. My usual response would have been to leap into action and sound the alarm, but I wasn't up to my usual response. I growled. That was about the best I could do. Who's out there? State your name and your business, or I'll... Who's there? There was a moment of silence. Then I heard Drover's voice.
Hank, you okay?
No, I'm not okay, and what do you mean, creeping around in the night?
Oh, I was up and thought I ought to come check on you.
Well, you sure took your time getting here. Where the devil have you been?
I got busy with a few things, Hank, and just never got around.
Get over here, son, so I won't have to yell. My throat hurts. He came closer, but stopped about 10 feet away. He seemed kind of uneasy about something.
Is this better?
Is there some reason why you can't come over here where I am? I ain't got scabies.
I know that, but I... Hank, I don't want to see you this way. I guess that's why I didn't come around sooner.
What do you mean by that? I'm the same Hank, only a little beat up.
That's what I mean, beat up.
He looked down at his feet and kind of shuffled around.
I've seen you fight monsters and coyotes and coons, and you always won. I guess I thought... You see what I mean?
Yeah, it's coming clear. A guy loses one fight and all his so-called friends think he's over the hill. Is that what you're saying?
It makes a guy wonder is all I'm saying. I don't know what to think.
Why, you little pipsqueak. Just for that, I'm gonna... I pushed myself up and started after him. Went 2 steps and fell down. Just didn't have the energy to thrash him.
That's what I mean, Hank. You ought to give me a licking for saying all this stuff. But you can't. I can do anything I want to do. But I don't know what I want to do. I'm all confused.
You're definitely confused.
But see, I know that if I wanted to stick my tongue out at you, like this, I could do it.
He did it. Stuck his tongue out at me. Watch it, Drover. You're breeding a scab on the end of your nose.
And I got a suspicion that if I wanted to parade in front of you, like this, I could do it too.
And that's just what the runt did. Paraded in front of me and stuck his tongue out. I took a snap at him, but he was just out of range. Drover, you're courting disaster.
And Hank, I have an idea that I could even throw some dirt on you and get by with it.
I wouldn't try that, son.
I know you wouldn't, and I wouldn't either. Only I just want to, like this.
He scratched the ground with his paw and threw dirt on me. I couldn't believe he did that. On a better day, I would have torn him apart. I mean ripped him up one side and down the other. But I had to lie there and take it. I managed to growl, but that was my best lick. Okay, Drover, you did it. You happy now?
No, I feel awful. I hate myself. I just don't know what to think anymore. Only I bet I could do it again.
And he did it again. Threw dirt on me, stuck out his tongue, and went prancing back and forth. Then he started crying.
Oh, Hank, why did you have to get whipped? I was happy the way things were, but now I just feel like a louse. Tell me what to do.
I shook the dirt off. All right, I'll tell you what to do. First thing, say you're sorry. Second thing, go up to the gas tank and say, I will be more respectful to the head of ranch security 1,000 times. And then go out on patrol and take care of the ranch.
All of that?
Yes, sir, every bit of it. He rolled his eyes and looked up at the stars.
But, Hank, I don't want to. And I don't have to. Because you can't make me.
I stared at him. Then why did you ask?
I don't know. I better go, Hank, before I make you mad.
You're a little late for that, son. He started backing away.
I'm sorry, Hank. I really am. I just wanted to find out.
He took off, and that was the last I saw of the sawed-off, stub-tailed, ungrateful little wretch. But all through the night, I heard him. You think he was out on patrol? Taking care of the ranch? Keeping an eye on the chicken house? Checking for coons? No, sir. He was out there playing peekaboo with Pete the Barn Cat. I had thought that maybe I would be better come morning, but I was worse. Not only did I ache and throb from nose to tail, but I was getting weak from hunger and thirst. And as if that wasn't enough, along about 10 o'clock in the morning, the ants and flies started moving in on me. It started with a couple of big green flies buzzing around my ears. Well, you know me. I don't allow that. Never have. I sat up and took defensive action. I snapped and growled and sent one to fly heaven, which was very satisfying, but not so good in the taste department. Never did care for the taste of green flies. The other one kept it up. Then there were 2 and 4 and 10 and 20, and I was wore out and couldn't keep them away. Finally, I laid my head down and gave up. They crawled over my nose and buzzed in my ears and walked around my eyes, and they bit me on the rump, which really hacked me off, but I didn't have the energy to fight back. Then came the ants, those little black villains that march in single file and contribute absolutely nothing to the world, except they sting innocent victims and drive you nuts. Why were they put on this earth? You got me. They came in rows and columns, marching up to me in unending lines. I don't know what they expected to find or why they singled me out, but by 10:30, I had become a major population center for ants. They crawled up my tail and just by George moved in. They were in my hair, on my face, inside my ears and nose and mouth, and when they found something they didn't approve of, they just stung it. Hateful little things. I tried to fight them off for a while, but there was no end to them. They just kept coming. I was too tired and weak and hungry to fight anymore, so I gave up. Heck, if they wanted to eat me alive, that was okay with me, as long as I didn't have to put out any effort. I guess it was around noon when Slim and Loper came around. I must have looked pretty ragged by then because I got their attention. Loper bent down and started picking ants off my face. Say, this dog's not doing any good. What's wrong, Hank? I lifted my head and gave him a wooden stare. What was wrong? I'd been defeated in battle, wounded, abandoned, mocked, and abused. I was thirsty, half-starved, windblown, sunburned, tormented by ants and flies. My spirit was smashed, my heart was broken, and I didn't give a rip. Other than that, it was a pretty nice day. Slim bent down, too. I heard his knees pop.
Maybe we better get him some food, reckon? You want some grub, Hanky?
Slim stayed at the saddle shed, and Loper went up to the house. He came back with a bowl of milk and eggs. I would have preferred scrambled eggs. It takes too much energy to eat them raw. I mean, you gotta chase down the slimy part and get a handle on it before you can eat it. But in this life, you don't always get your eggs scrambled. I got to admit that the boys were pretty nice to me this time. I mean, it came about 24 hours too late, but at least they made an effort. They set the bowl down in front of my nose and went on to lunch. I took a few bites and decided maybe it was worth the trouble of eating, when all at once, guess who came along, rubbing up against the fence, purring like a little chainsaw, and holding his tail high in the air. You got it, Pete. I stopped eating and gave him a withering glare.
Hi, Hanky. Time to eat?
Scram, cat. I got no time for your foolishness.
Where'd you get all the flies?
I got lonesome. He grinned and sharpened his claws on a fence post.
What would you take for some milk and eggs, Hanky? I just love milk and eggs.
I'd take one of your legs and about 6 inches off that tail. Beat it. He looked at his claws and rubbed against the post and moved towards the bowl in his typical dumb cat manner, purring and switching the top of his tail. I don't know what it is about that tail switching, but it just don't sit right with me. There's something about it that gets me stirred up. I glared at him and growled. He walked up to the edge of the bowl and flicked his paw into the milk and licked it.
That's mighty tasty, Hanky. How come they're giving you milk and eggs today? That's pretty plush treatment for a dog.
He turned and curled the end of his tail around my nose.
A dog that got whipped.
I snapped at him, missed amputating his tail by just a matter of inches. I'll plush your treatment if you don't get that tail out of my face. He grinned.
How come your eyes are crossed, Hanky?
It's a latest style.
It must be hard to be cocky when you're cross-eyed, huh?
I'll manage. Stick that tail over here one more time and I'll show you. He did. I snapped, I missed, he grinned.
Strike two, Hanky. Your aim's not what it used to be. That's sure too bad because...
He took a big stretch and dug his claws into the dirt.
Because I just might try to steal your milk.
You touch my milk and you're a dead cat.
Bet you can't stop me.
I pushed myself up to a sitting position, with considerable effort, I might add, and prepared for combat. You just try it. He reached out his paw and touched the surface of the milk, ever so lightly.
I touched it.
He touched off a By George explosion is what he touched. I didn't think I had enough energy to romp a cat, but come to find out I did. I made a slash at him and missed. He walked away, flicking his tail and grinning at me over his shoulder.
Strike three, Hanky. Bet you can't catch me.
I lunged at him and got him. Well, I got some hairs off the end of his tail, actually. But that was enough to make me want some more. I made another pounce at him. He squirmed out of my grip and went padding across the pasture towards the creek. Ordinarily, he would have made a dash for the nearest tree, but this time he didn't. Well, this gave me a valuable piece of information, and I began to formulate an overall strategy and plan a battle, which is one of the normal procedures we use in the security business. One of the major advantages a cow dog has over a cat is that your ordinary run-of-the-mill cat is flighty and impulsive, while your cow dog applies mental discipline to every problem.
I think most experts would back me up on this. I mean, let's face it. It's a well-known fact that cats act on whim and impulse and lack the mental whatever it is to think in terms of long-range strategy. Some authorities would say they're fairly stupid animals, which is what I'd say. Pete's behavior offered a classic example of this. Instead of staying close to the big trees around the corral, he headed down towards the creek, where the trees tended to be small and scrubby. Creek willows and tamaracks instead of elms and cottonwoods. In other words, Pete had made a crucial mistake which any dog trained in security work would never make. He had become cocky and careless and had allowed himself to be lured away from his best defensive position. Once I had my basic strategy in mind, I followed the cat out into the pasture and down into the creek willows, keeping him in sight and waiting for my big opportunity. We call this lulling the enemy. As Uncle Beanie used to say, lull him to sleep and then wake him up in the rudest possible manner. I must have stalked him for a mile or more, far enough from the house so that it was unfamiliar territory. I figured that was far enough. The time had come. The bell was tolling for whom the bell was tolling for. He was maybe 5 feet in front of me. I gathered all my strength, threw it into one mighty lunge, and didn't lunge because my knees went out on me. All at once I was so weak I couldn't stand up. I laid down and tried to catch my breath. Felt a little fuzzy in the head. Pete was grinning, another indication that he didn't understand the seriousness of his situation.
Nice day for a walk, isn't it, Hanky?
Give me a minute to catch my breath and I'll show you how nice a day it is. Sure was feeling weak. Pete yawned and stretched.
Tell me something, Hanky. With your eyes crossed, how will you find your way back home?
Huh?
I need to get back and finish your milk and eggs. You followed me out here, but you won't be following me back. It might be hard to find the ranch.
Hadn't thought of it in exactly those terms. Wait a minute, Cap. You walked into my trap, so don't be trying to...
See you around, Hanky.
He walked away, switching his tail and purring. He glanced back at me and winked.
If you need anything, just give me a call.
Don't think you can bluff me, Cat. Hey, come back here. Pete? Hey, listen, I was only... Let's talk this thing over. How the devil had I got myself into this mess? As the afternoon wore on, I began to suspect that I was in a whole gob of trouble. There's no pleasant way of describing my situation. I was in deep trouble, and with night coming on, it was getting deeper and deeper. Let's face it, the ranch was a dangerous place even in broad daylight. But at night, when the forces of darkness came out, it was no place for the faint-hearted. When the sun slipped over the horizon, I felt the dampness rising from the ground and a shiver of dread passed through my battered carcass. Up the creek a ways, I heard the mournful hoot of an owl and overhead the swish of a bull bat's wings. And little footsteps out there in the dark. Mice, pack rats, lizards, frogs, snakes. A guy didn't know what kind of creature might be creeping around out there. Only I'll have to admit that snakes don't have feet, so they don't make footsteps. But that's pretty creepy in itself. An animal that slithers and doesn't have the common decency to make a sound. Me and snakes never did get along. Just don't like them at all. The way they sneak and slither and slide and glide through the grass. And if I don't quit talking about snakes, I'm going to get myself worked into a scare. No more about snakes. There were no snakes out there slithering through the grass, so that was one less thing I had to worry about, although I kept hearing this slithering sound out there in the grass.
sounded a lot like snakes, but I knew in my heart that it was big worms. I ain't scared of worms, even big ones. I was feeling mighty small and helpless, curled up there in a ball with one ear perked up to monitor the sounds of the night, when all at once I heard a different kind of noise. Heavy footsteps, the crackle of brush, the rumble of voices, and then, singing? Impossible. Nobody but a bunch of drunken coyotes would be singing at that hour of the night. I held my breath and listened.
Me just a worthless coyote, me howling at the moon. Me like to sing and holler, me crazy as a loon. Me not watch about duties, no church or Sunday school. Me just a worthless coyote, and me ain't nobody's fool.
Well, I certainly recognized that song, and I had a suspicion that I knew the guys who were singing it. Rip and Snort, the two coyote brothers. I'd had some good times with those boys back during my outlaw days, but I'd last seen them on the field of battle when I had single-handedly turned back an invasion of the entire coyote nation and saved the chicken house from a massacre. I had some pretty fierce hand-to-hand combat with Rip and Snort, and I didn't figure they'd be real friendly if they caught me out there all by myself, half blind and helpless. I held my breath, hoping they'd pass. They came closer and closer. They were so busy singing and carrying on that I thought they'd miss me. But all at once the singing stopped. Silence. I could hear my heart thumping. A twig snapped close by. I heard them whispering. I turned my head around and looked into the sharp-nosed, yellow-eyed face of a coyote. Well, if it isn't, I'll be darned. How in the world are you, Snort? By George, it's great to see you boys again. They stared at me. Been a long time, hasn't it? I could tell they were thinking. How's the family? How's old Scrunch getting along? Just as ornery as ever, I'll bet. They were still thinking. Rip and Snort were never what you'd call rapid thinkers.
How come Hunk out here alone?
Alone? Well, that's pretty obvious, isn't it? I mean, maybe it's not so obvious, huh?
Not so obvious.
I had a feeling that what I said here would be crucial to my survival. That's a lot of pressure, especially when you're in poor health. Well, fellas, I could tell you what I'm doing out here, but you wouldn't believe it. I mean, it's just the wildest, craziest thing you ever heard in your life. You wouldn't believe it, would you?
Hear first, then decide.
It'll take special powers of belief, and unless you guys think you can handle it, I'd rather not go into it. They sat down.
Tell story.
I glanced over both shoulders and lowered my voice. Listen, I wouldn't be out here if this wasn't pretty darn special. I came alone because I didn't want anybody else to know about it. And if you should happen to pry this out of me, you got to promise three things. They traded glances.
What promises?
First off, you got to promise never to tell anybody about it. If news of this ever got out, well, it could be very serious. You promise never to tell?
We promise.
All right, second thing is, you've got to follow the directions exactly and to the letter. One little mistake could cause a catastrophe. Snort narrowed his eyes.
What means catastrophe?
It means boom, fire, explosion, black smoke in the sky, thunder and lightning, famine and drought, dead birds falling out of trees, the whole nine yards. You sure you want to know? They went into a huddle and talked it over. Then Snort said,
We take the chance.
All right. Now we're coming down to the last promise. You've got to promise to believe everything I tell you, no matter how crazy it sounds. Snort shook his head.
Not work. Hear first, then say. Snort not believe every crazy stuff that come along. I was real sorry to hear that because the stuff I had in mind was pretty crazy. The brothers were getting restless. Snort got to his feet and stuck his sharp nose into my face.
Better you tell or we have big fight, oh boy.
All right, relax. Look, Snort, you agreed to promise number two, right? You promised to follow all the directions, right?
Right, that one okay.
One of the directions is that you have to believe the story. Snort and Rip looked at each other, and Snort said, But I'll be reasonable about it. Since you've already agreed to believe the story, I'll drop the third promise. Would that make you feel better? Snort sat down and scratched his ear for a minute.
Very complicated. Not quite understand.
Yeah, but a promise is a promise. That's simple enough. What do you say? Shall we scratch number three? Snort stared at me.
Scratch ear. Got fleas.
I mean, shall we drop promise number three? That's the best I can do.
We make talk.
They went into a huddle and talked it over in whispers. Then Snort said,
Okay, we make deal. Drop promise three. Keep one and two.
When it comes down to driving a bargain, you guys are pretty tough.
We very tough. Fighting a lot and singing coyote song.
Well, are you ready for this? Their heads bobbed up and down.
We ready.
Then here goes. See that moon up there? Would you believe that it's made out of chopped chicken liver? They shook their heads. But you've already promised to believe it. They bobbed their heads up and down. Now, would you believe the moon can come down from the sky and land right here on the ground? And would you believe you can eat that chopped chicken liver until you bust? They shook their heads. But you already promised to believe it. They bobbed their heads up and down. And would you believe that if you two guys stuck your heads into the opposite ends of a hollow log and counted to 50,000 by ones, it'd make the moon come down? Rip shook his head, but Snort raised his paw.
Ha! We already promised believe!
He looked at me and grinned.
Brother not catch on yet!
And Rip nodded his head. Well, there you are, guys. Now you know the whole story. But I hope you don't think I'm going to let you have the first shot at that chicken liver.
Honk not catch on either. Rip and Snort get whole moon. Eat sick, throw up, and eat some more. Oh, boy. Honk, good dog, sing pretty good, but not smart like coyote.
Hey, listen. With great effort, I pushed myself up. And with very little effort, Snort pushed me back down.
Stay there. Maybe we bring one liver. Now we find hollow log. Count to many thousand. So long, Honk.
But what about... Hey, wait! They plunged into the darkness, yipping and howling and laughing their heads off. I didn't waste a minute. I dragged myself down to the creek, slipped into a deep pool, and swam across to the other side. I didn't want to be around come morning. As you might have already figured out by now, I went into the creek for two reasons. Because it's easier to swim than to walk when you're stove up, and because you don't leave a scent in water. I didn't want those two brothers following my scent. I swam as far as I could until the creek got too shallow, and then I climbed out and started walking. The swim must have done me some good because my aches and pains felt better when I got out. But I still had that eye crocerosis problem, and I had no idea where I was going. I walked until I came to a big cottonwood tree, and that's where I stopped for the night. Didn't sleep too soundly. Kept having the same bad dream about getting whooped on my own ranch by a Doberman pincher. Sounds familiar, don't it? What woke me up was the sound of voices, two of them, and I knew that Rip and Snort had tracked me down and were fixing to stomp a mud hole in Hank the cowdog. I just wasn't ready for that.
I opened my eyes and looked around. Couldn't see anyone, not even a blurred image of anyone. But then I heard the voices again, coming from the tree above me. I'd heard those voices before. They belonged to a couple of buzzards.
Junior, you get out of that bed and go find us some breakfast.
But, Papa...
It's shameful the way you mope around in the mornings. Why, when I was your age...
But, Papa...
I was up every morning at daylight. Yes, I was. Out looking for food. Do you want to know what your trouble is, son?
Not really.
The trouble with you is you're lazy and shiftless. Yes, sir. And you seem to think our grub's gonna come walking up and park itself at the bottom of this tree. But life isn't that way, son. I've told you and I've told you.
Papa?
What?
I think something walked up and parked itself at the bottom of this tree. Cause there's something down there.
There was a long silence. Then Wallace said,
And the other trouble with you, Junior, is that you have this smart-alecky streak. Nobody likes a smart-aleck, son. What is that thing down there?
Beats me, but it's got two tails and an ear.
You mean two ears and a tail?
But that's what it said.
You reckon it'll eat?
I bet it will, cause I'm hungry.
Follow me, son, and always remember that your elders get first dibs. I want a leg.
I glanced up and saw Wallace spread his wings and step off the branch. He flapped as hard as he could, but he must have miscalculated because he flew right into a tangle of grapevines that were hanging on a big tree nearby. He squawked and flapped and tried to get out, but he got a leg hung and ended up hanging upside down.
Dang the luck! Now look what you got me into!
Junior stepped off the branch, flapped his wings, and crashed on the ground. The impact drove his beak into the dirt, and he got up spitting.
Junior, get me down from here! Don't you dare take a bite! Not one bite until I get there!
Junior ignored him. He had a crazy grin on his face and came hopping towards me. I raised up and growled and showed him some fangs. He stopped in his tracks, and you should have seen that smile disappear. It just, by George, melted.
Oh, darn.
Junior, there's no call for cussing. Now you just watch your language.
Well, you cuss all the time.
Son, there's a time for cussing and a time for not cussing. And when you get old enough to know right from wrong, we'll let you try it. But there's no call for cussing at this particular... Get me out of this tree!
Junior glanced at me again. I gave him another growl and he edged a few steps away.
Papa, it's him again. That same dog.
What?
And he ain't dead again.
As I said, Wallace was hanging upside down. He stared at me and I stared at him, and for good measure I gave him another growl.
Well, I'll be, of all the dad dang gosh blame stinking horrifying son of a gun pig nose lousy luck.
Papa, you're cussing.
You're dang right I'm cussing. When it's time to cuss, a guy needs to do it right. And furthermore, you get me out of this tree right now. You hear me? Or I'll...
You what, Pa?
Just then, his foot came loose and he crashed to the ground.
Be danged! Like to have broke my neck. But you don't care. All you ever think about is yourself. Because the trouble with you, son, is that you got no respect for age and wisdom is what's wrong with you.
I thought that the trouble with me was that...
Wallace straightened his neck and came waddling over.
You got lots of troubles is the trouble with you.
He came over and glared down at me.
Shame on you.
Well, shame on you right back. That straightened him up.
Junior, did you hear that? Are you gonna just stand there and take that off a dog?
Junior peeked around the old man.
Most likely I will, Pa, most likely, because he might bite.
Well, I never. when I was your age.
The old man rubbed his beak with the end of his wing and scowled.
Say there, neighbor, aren't you the same one who gave us a chicken head one time?
Yep.
I don't reckon you got another one.
Nope.
Didn't figure you did. Sure could use one, though.
Just then I had a brilliant idea. Speaking of that chicken head, seems to me you boys promised to do me a favor sometime. The old man shook his head.
I don't recall that. Sure don't.
Well, we did, Pa. We sure did.
Wallace snapped his head towards Junior.
And you can just hush. You don't have to tell everything you know.
Back to me.
Maybe we did.
Well, I'm here to collect.
What exactly did you have in mind, neighbor? We've had some bad luck lately, and...
I explained about the eye crocerosis problem and how I was lost and couldn't find my way back to the ranch. All of a sudden, Wallace seemed mighty interested.
I see what you mean. Yes, I do. A guy could starve to death out here.
But Madam Moonshine could fix his eyes.
Me and the old man turned and stared at Junior, and I said, "Who's Madam Moonshine?"
Hush your mouth, Junior, don't you?
She's a witch, and she lives in a cave.
She's a witch, and she lives in a cave?
No, she's no such thing. And she don't live in no cave, and Junior, you leave the talking to me, and as for you, we can't help you.
I got to my feet and went nose to nose with the old man.
Listen, you old bucket of guts, I gave you a chicken head, and I'm fixing to collect a buzzard's head unless you take me to Madam Moonshine. Pronto. Well, you don't have to be so tacky about it. I just thought, see what you done, Junior?
I'd have done right, Papa, 'cause he's our friend.
Friend? The only friend a buzzard's got is his next meal. Wouldn't hurt you to remember that.
Wallace went waddling through the willows, still grumbling to himself, and me and Junior fell in behind. Up ahead, I could hear Wallace carrying on.
Dang kids, tried to tell the boy, stubborn, mule-headed, never amount to bird hockey.
It was quite a procession. Two waddling buzzards and one jake-legged dog. As we walked along, Junior told me about Madam Moonshine. Said she was a burrowing owl, used to live in a prairie dog town, which is where you find most burrowing owls, don't you see? Only the prairie dogs ran her out of town because she had a witchy kind of power. Sounded pretty strange to me. We picked our way through the willows, until at last we came to a rocky ledge on the south bank of the creek. Wallace stopped and pointed to a cave.
There it is. This is as far as we go. She's in there somewhere.
I turned to Junior. You sure this is the right thing to do?
I bet she can fix you.
Well, thanks again. I started up the ledge. When I went past the old man, he curled his lip at me.
Good luck, and we'll watch out for the snakes.
Huh?
Rattlesnakes. Dozens of them. Places crawling with them. And say, if you get bit, try to make it outside the cave before you die, would you? I'd like for something to come of this friendship.
I tried to think of a brilliant reply, something slashing and witty that would really put the old bird in his place. Sometimes I can come up with brilliant replies, and sometimes I can't. This time I couldn't. I headed for the cave, feeling just a little shaky about them snakes, not to mention the witch. I'd never met a witch before.